and Senator Harris has been trying to persuade his fellow senators to vote against it. By talking for so long, he has hoped that it will give some chance for the opposition to make a stronger case, sway others to their point of view. "What is the bill?" I ask. Ethan lays his head down on his desk and closes his eyes as Ray explains. "The bill is the Medical Access Act, which will put all medical decisions and choices back into the hands of physician and patient. It will cut the FSEB entirely out of the process." "And he thinks that's bad?"
"Weren't you listening, Jenna? Of course it's bad."
Alice doesn't try to hide her disappointment in me.
"If the FSEB had been in existence 50 years ago, I might not be stuck with all this hardware. My toes might actually feel like toes and not numbed-up sausages. And this isn't just all about me. Look at the aureus epidemic and the millions who might not have died. And now Congress is trying to limit its power? Next, they'll want them out of all the research labs. God help us if that happens."
"But," Mitch says, "the counterargument is that the FSEB is a bureaucratic financial drain that often impedes life-saving measures."
"It's the tech and pharmaceutical companies who are behind it," Alice says, ignoring Mitch's comment. "They've been lobbying like crazy. The big ones like ScribTech, Medway, and especially Fox Biosystems."
Click. Alice hesitates for the briefest second, her eyes flickering over me, before she finishes her sentence. Probably a millisecond no one else notices.
"They've poured billions into getting this bill passed."
And with that last sentence, she sits down. She is suddenly done talking about the bill. Ray continues with the lesson, trying to prod us to share our opinions, but an unexpected blanket has come down on us. Mitch leaves. Ray turns off the net and says we will talk more after lunch. Maybe food will perk us up. We walk to the market across the street and sit at our usual corner table. I notice Alice's face is damp, with a dull yellow pallor, while her hands remain a cool, creamy, prosthetic peach. When she swallows her pills, they seem to crawl down her throat. She takes another sip of water, trying to coax them down, then another. She stares at me. I stare back. She nibbles at her food, then pushes it away. Ethan looks back and forth between us, his leg jiggling and shaking the table.
"You're Jenna Fox, aren't you?" she finally says.
"Brilliant!" Ethan jumps in much too quickly. "How'd you figure that out? Maybe from her telling you the first day she met you?"
"Don't smooth things over for me, Ethan," I say. His leg stops jiggling, and he draws in a deep, pleading breath. Alice shakes her head.
"It's all coming together. Most people don't pay attention to that kind of news, but working in the ethics office, I hear it all. I remember something about a daughter," she says. "I should have put it together when you told me you were in an accident. You're the daughter of Matthew Fox."
"Would that make me the enemy?" I ask.
"No.
But?" Ethan shakes his head ever so slightly.
"Jenna," he whispers. "They said his daughter was in an accident, one that most professionals believed was not survivable."
"At least with the FSEB's current point system in place, right?"
"That's right."
"Well, then maybe I'm not her after all. Jenna Fox is a common name."
"Maybe not," she says. "Because if you were her, that would mean..."
She trails off, deliberately leaving a space for us to fall into. I see it. Ethan doesn't.
"What?"
he blurts out.
"You'd have to run to your little squadron of FSEB bureaucrats and report her?"
Alice sits back, her eyes narrowing on me, then Ethan. She pulls off her prosthetic arm and rubs the stump. It's red and scarred and ugly.
"You give me too much credit, Ethan. I can't run anywhere. I can only hobble. Obvious,
isn't it?
She returns her prosthetic arm to her stump, wincing at the momentary pinch of the magnetic fields that hold it tight. She tests her fingers, one by one.
I'm beginning to forget, I think, what they ever felt like. It scares me, what science can do.
She pushes away her sandwich.
I guess, right along with my fingers, I've lost my appetite.
She stands. Neither Ethan nor I stop her, and she leaves. I lift my fingers until they're silhouetted against the sunlit window. I test them, just as Alice did. One by one. Packaging.
Maybe.
She's going to tell.
Ethan pulls me close. We're behind the market, knee-deep in overgrown grass, sandwiched between forgotten picnic tables and trash bins. He pulled me away when I began to cry, leaving his lunch and curious stares from other customers behind. I feel his arms stroke my back, his hands tighten around my waist, his breath and his smell, my tongue warm against his, a stirring inside of me that makes my tongue press farther. Did I ever feel these things before? Do I care? Our kisses are desperate. My sobs return, wild, like an animal. Ethan holds tighter, like he can squeeze away my demons. I push away.
Why do you care, Ethan? You don't know me.
His hands drop from my sides. He closes his eyes and shakes his head.
Ethan,
I whisper.
I don't know, Jenna.
His eyes are wide again, glassy.
I feel something. Every time I look at you, don't ask me to explain it all. Does everything have to have a tidy explanation?
I'm not like other girls.
I know.
Ethan.
I cup his face in my hands.
You don't know. I'm beyond different. I'm...
Maybe that's what I see when I look at you, Jenna. Someone who will never fit in again in quite the same way. Someone like me. Someone with a past that's changed their future forever.
Or maybe it's just that you see me as a second chance. You couldn't save your brother, but maybe you can save Jenna. Justice, is that what you're looking for?
He steps away and kicks the loose leg of a picnic table so it tumbles to one side. Then he swings around.
Or maybe I'm a masochist, and I like girls who are as annoying as hell. Don't try to analyze me, Jenna. I am what I am.
And I am what I am. I just need a definition for what that is. Jenna. Noun. 1. Coward. 2. Possibly human. 3. Maybe not. 4. Definitely illegal.
Let's not argue.
Ethan comes up behind me and places his hands on my schmishers.
Why did you cry back in the market?
Are you afraid? We'll talk to Alice. Change your mind.
I'm not afraid, Ethan.
At least not of Alice. I'm afraid of my thoughts, my feelings. I'm afraid of my fingers against a sunlit window and the shocking relief that comes with it, when I should feel shame. I'm afraid that I feel wildly alive and grateful and like the special, entitled miracle child Jenna Fox, while boxes sit in a closet trapping minds that will never see fingers or sunlight again. And I'm too afraid to let them go because I might need them. I am afraid of 100 things, including you, Ethan, because everything in the universe says it's not right. But that doesn't keep me from wanting it. And I'm afraid I'm becoming something that the old Jenna Fox never was, and maybe 10% isn't enough after all. I'm afraid of Dane, and that the something that everyone says he's missing is the same thing Father may have left out of me, too. And that Senator Harris is perfectly right about it all, and Father is perfectly wrong. I'm afraid I will never have friends like Kara and Locke again, and it will be all my fault. I'm afraid that for the rest of my 2 or 200 years, I will still have all these questions, and I will never fit in.
And I'm afraid that Claire and Matthew Fox will discover that the new, improved Jenna doesn't add up to 3 babies at all. And never did. And everything they risked was for nothing. Because when all's said and done, I'm not special at all. Those are the kind of things I'm afraid of. But I am not afraid of Alice. She said she liked me, I say to him. She wouldn't tell. I saw her eyes. I turn around and lay my head against his chest. I listen to his heartbeat. A real heartbeat. We need to talk to her. Soon, he says. Sliding. Alice is not at school the next day, or the next. Should I worry? I listen for sounds. Knocks on the door. Footsteps. Sirens tracking me down. When mother and father are gone and Lily's out in the greenhouse, I listen, waiting for the silence of the house to crumble. I wait for creaks on the stairs, and I wonder what it would be like to be imprisoned again. And then when the silence is long and sustained, and I'm beginning to believe it will always be there, when a tiny doorway is opened and I'm trying to slide through to that place called normal, the silence is broken again. Not by footsteps, but by a voice. Hurry, Jenna! A voice crisp and clear. Not the voice of my past. Not the voice of a dream. The voice of now. There are no keys flying through the air. No hot glimpses of a night that still escapes me, but has changed me forever. No memories of words said in haste, but fresh words that somehow crawl through my scalp until I feel I may be mad. We need you now. Match. I stomp through our eucalyptus forest, letting my feet come down hard on twisted pieces of bark and twigs, listening to the snap, the crunch, and the sounds I can control. I kick up the woven mat of leaves at my feet and release months and years of decay and send beetles scurrying for cover. The voices are quiet. I slow my pace. Is it guilt speaking to me? Or did Father not understand everything his tampering might lead to? I hear the rush of the creek at the bottom of the incline and the rustle of something else nearby. Birds? The forest is foreign, an import, Lily tells me. At the turn of the last century, someone thought he could make his fortune raising the timber for railroad ties. As it turned out, the wood was too hard for cutting once it dried, and the groves were abandoned. They spread on their own, sometimes wiping out native species of plants. Lily is not pleased. Original, native, pure. These are the words that matter to Lily and Alice. I look at the trees that don't belong, brought here through no fault of their own. Their bark is soft velvet, mottled and creamy, and their scent is pungent. The leaves, smooth slices of silvery green, create a thick, lacy carpet on the forest floor. Beautiful, but unwanted. What if they crowded out that was more beautiful or more important? I reach out between 2 trees, pressing a hand against each, breathing in slowly, closing my eyes, searching for something beyond their bark and branches and second-class status on these hills, searching for something like their souls. Snap! Crunch! My eyes shoot open. Pain grips my wrist. Dane! I try to pull away, but he holds tight, squeezing harder, watching my face for my response. Let go, I tell him. His face is no longer empty, but instead crackling with something else. It is the only time I've seen his eyes bright and engaged, like he's been plugged in. He doesn't smile. Let's go for a walk, he says. I'm not walking anywhere with you, Dane. Why? You prefer boys like Ethan who are dangerous? I could be dangerous. He pulls me closer, his breathing labored. I feel his fingers dig into my skin. His blue eyes pulled to sharp pinpoints, like an animal's, adrenaline-driven, hungry for nothing else but destruction, empty of self and others. Dane, fully flesh and blood, but 100% of nothing.
Not nearly as dangerous as me. I'm leaving.
I try to pull away.
I see.